There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 917, December 21st. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say greetings and grumbling regards. New FIA president says no forgiveness for LCH, and F1 Weekly listeners are lashing out from the last race. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Tot out, Sulayem in. Toto may never be normal again. Lush is on the loose, and he's back in the studio with another great episode, and we have Philip Pegler's perspective, and of course, all this turmoil in F1 brings out the best in all of us. And I just want to remind everybody, we need your contributions to keep this program up on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, sir, I'm trying to recover from what happened last weekend. And good news is sun is coming up every day. And I'm thinking, you know, what you just said, it reminds me of what the late journalist Robin Miller used to say, hate is good. So we have a lot of, finger pointings. Some camps are happy, some are not. And I do hope we have calm after the desert storm. Max got his prize very deservedly at the FIA Gala. James Allison took the Constructors' Cup for Mercedes, and Valtteri Bottas was also there. Missing in action were Lewis Hamilton and Toto Wolff, who skipped the festivities due to what he called his loyalty to Lewis. Very, very impressive. Nice to see such a strong bond between team boss and his driver. Have you recovered from the shenanigans of, or should I say the messiness of past weekend?
I have completely recovered. And now that Fernando was on another podium after the fiasco in Abu Dhabi, I was happy. And not only that, but he's promising that Renault, or should I say Alpine, will be competitive. And it's going to be very, very exciting.
Well, we will find out in a few weeks as the testing starts. Now, there are some calling Mercedes, Lewis, and Toto bad losers. The question I have is how McLaren, Ferrari, and Alpine would have dealt with this messiness if the man leading the race and championship before Latifi hit the barriers was Ricciardo or Leclerc, of the aforementioned machismo. But Mr. Rogers, we are not going to mourn over what happened last weekend from here to eternity, but since emotions were and are running high from America to Australia, we are happy to share thoughts of F1 Weekly familiar members. Mr. Philip Pegler presents his Pegler's perspective. These are his views, and we thank him for his time here. So, shall we listen to Mr. Pegler now?
So normally I write my Pegler's perspectives out, and I edit them and tidy them up and record them two or three times to make it sound, you know, as professional as I can. But in this instance, I'm just wanting to give you my two cents, as it were, on the finale of the Formula One World Championship. I'm really feeling numb 4 days later. and in a way sort of hollowed out by the whole thing. I am not ashamed to say that I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan, but on the other side, I'm also an even bigger fan of Formula One and sporting regulations being followed and technical regulations being followed. This whole thing has left a very sour taste in my mouth, and in particular the performance of the race director, Michael Massey. I suppose, you know, this has been ebbing and flowing over the last 3 to 4 years since Massey took over. But, you know, I think the first time it really boiled over was 10 days ago in Jeddah, when the Red Bull team were offered a deal, in a manner of speaking, as to where they would restart following the red flag. And to me, I couldn't believe it, that I was listening to a director of what we all regard as the pinnacle of motorsport offering a deal to a racing team. I think the race director is supposed to give direction, and that definitely was not happening. And I felt right then and there that the door was then left ajar for further things to happen. To be honest, I never imagined the season finale would end the way it did. And, you know, in the latter stages of the race, I was a little concerned that Hamilton perhaps wouldn't hold off Verstappen, but he seemed to hold it at about 11 seconds, and the laps were winding down, and I started feeling pretty confident that it was going to be okay. And of course, then we know what happened, so there's no need to go over it again. What blows my mind is that one man can override the race stewards. I think the racing director is supposed to effectively manage the race, oversee the race is executed following the sporting regulations, the technical regulations, and that all procedures and protocols are followed and carried out by those people under his direction. I didn't realize that the race director had the authority to rewrite the rules or to interpret the rules as he sees fit. I think, you know, there have been moments with Hamilton and Verstappen on track this year which have raised eyebrows, and you know, depending on which driver you're supporting, you know, one's at fault or the other's at fault. But that aside, the race in Abu Dhabi, the first lap accepted, everything was very clean, very decent, very professional. And then we got to this last lap, this last phase of the race, where the racing director took it upon himself to change and sort of malign, manipulate the safety car rule. It was unfortunate that Hamilton had passed the pit entrance when the safety car came out, therefore making it impossible for him to make a pit stop and retain his lead in front of Verstappen, unless Verstappen did so simultaneously. So I suppose, you know, the next time round, Verstappen had nothing to lose. He pitted, but was in front of the pit lane, or rather before the pit entrance, when the safety car came out, and so he was able to get in and out, whereas Hamilton wasn't. So a simple solution to that for the future would be that no cars are allowed to pit the first time by. So basically, until the safety car comes back to the pits for the second time, the safety car would, of course, be deployed and leave the pit lane, and the leader would catch the safety car. At which point, once everybody was behind the safety car, they would then be allowed to pit. So that would be the second time, or the end of the first lap of the safety car. And no one can pit before that. That's very much a NASCAR rule and an IndyCar rule, and I think that would be well implemented in Formula One. And then, you know, there would be a team aspect of competing for getting out of the pits first. So if Verstappen had been able to pass Hamilton in the pits because of a quicker pit stop, being a team sport, that's fair enough. So that would add a better excitement and drama. Instead, what happened was that handicapped Hamilton was stuck out front, and there was never going to be a chance of him being able to retain the lead. And so that alone is wrong on principle. We then get to the issue of cleaning up the track. Everything was done very well, very efficiently, and no one dragged their heels about it, which was really good, because, you know, you don't want to see sort of marshals who want one driver to win, doing things slowly to take up more time. And so that was really good, and they removed the Latifi's car. And then there was the issue of no cars going round, no lap cars being released. And then, seemingly at the urging of Christian Horner, the lap cars were then, at short notice, released. Except not all of them were. Now again, those cars that are lapped down could be in a race of their own. And to then handicap two or three of those cars against the cars that were released is also wrong. Thirdly, the cars that are released are supposed to drive away and complete their lap and line up at the back of the field, which takes about a lap. This was avoided by the fact that Massey then informed the teams they were going to go racing straight away, offering a one-lap shootout to the finish. These are all fly in the face of what's written down. You know, it's honestly, it's wrong. The way it's run is wrong. We turn our attention to Max Verstappen. We can't fault the guy. He drove flawlessly, and even though he did have the advantage of new tyres, he was only racing by the rules, and he won the race fair and square in terms of what he was allowed to do. So we can't fault Max Verstappen, and if he is to remain Formula One world champion, I do think we should wholeheartedly and unreservedly congratulate him. I think for me the issue is a broader one, and that is looking at the future of the integrity of the FIA and its governance of motorsport, and in this instance in Formula One. Formula One is, by all accounts, the pinnacle of motorsport, the top level. And while Drive to Survive on Netflix has been great for garnering a greater audience for the sport, we can't run the sport like a Hollywood movie script, reality TV. It's a sport. There are people's lives at risk on track. There are the careers, lives and welfares of all of those who run the sport, who participate in the sport, whether it's in the teams, from the people who clean the shop floors, to the cooks, to the caterers, to the designers, to the mechanics, to the engineers, all of the people involved in Formula One, their livelihoods are at stake by how this sport is run and how it's governed. I see that Formula One is at a junction, a fork junction, and it can make a choice here. The FIA has got to expose itself and its flaws. It needs to come clean. The issue here is the FIA, and unfortunately, Max Verstappen could very well be the victim of a correction of a wrongdoing by the sports governing body. I suppose in a perfect world, both drivers could be co-world champion, but again, that is not something that we can do, and there is no precedent for that, save the chase for the NASCAR Cup and adding Jeff Gordon into it some years ago. I think the FIA need to make this correction. They need to restore the results to the end of lap 57. The last lap should be thrown out and disregarded, and the race results should be declared as they were at the end of lap 57. Lewis Hamilton would then by default be declared world champion, but there's no real victor there between the drivers. The victor would be, in the end, Formula One and the FIA. They would garner far more respect by admitting their faults than trying to hide them. Michael Massey, I think his tenure in the position of race director should come to a close, and we need to take a strong, careful look over the winter at how we're going to do things from next season. Formula One is not a playground. It's not a circus. It's a professional sport. It needs to be run like one, and those who are in charge need to set the example with integrity, honesty, and transparency. Wishing you all a very, very happy holiday, and all best wishes for the new year.
Philip, keep up the good work.
Okay, sir. Now we go from America to Australia. We have Mr. Lucien Byfield going loose on the loose. Again, my thanks to him for taking the time to record this and sharing. And here he goes.
This is Lucien Byfield from South Australia with Loose on the Loose, a small Formula One review of that 2021 ending and a bit more. Hey there, Clark and Nasir. Oh my goodness, how do I even begin? I feel like I have to make a ton of disclaimers before even getting to the meat of the subject and the many elephants in the room. Well, firstly, I must say this. In a non-parity series, where we will never know who the best driver really is, Given that the rules state that the teams must be independent constructors and therefore can find advantages based on budget, personnel, and if possessing the resources, can hire the top-end drivers, I do feel the right guy of the two won the title this year, if for no other reason than he had more bad luck. I feel like a child at Christmas, looking at all the presents under the tree and not knowing which one to open first. But I will start as they are presented to my mind right now. And firstly, I must say, despite the popular urban legend that Red Bull were the fastest car by a mile, I do not agree. Definitely not overall. At best, you could say, on the balance of the season, the cars were 50-50, where sometimes the Red Bull was faster and sometimes the Mercedes was faster. Thank goodness certain commentators saw it, for Lewis Hamilton has somehow perpetuated a very Nigel Mansell-esque narrative that he is always up against it and has to climb every mountain at every race, and speaks of having hard seasons every year when clearly, usually in the best car, and with a poodle for a teammate. Red Bull were definitely fast on certain tracks, sure, and they rose to the occasion many times. But what is clear is that based on teammate performance within the top two teams, Mercedes and Red Bull, Lewis and Max were the far superior drivers week in, week out. I love IndyCar for the fact that it is a parity series. That is not to say that the teams are all equal on talent and budget, but with relatively equal cars and stable rules, when you see a Scott Dixon or a Joseph Newgarden continue to win year after year, you know they are very special, for cream always rises to the top. But in Formula One, every season, there will be at least 8 drivers who could be winning regularly if the cars were equal. If every driver were driving a spec Mercedes, I can promise you Fernando would be up there, as would Leclerc, Russell, Norris, and a few more. With this in mind, if a top driver gets into a top team that is fast, reliable, and endures a long period of dominance, you will see that one driver clean up in the statistics year after year, earning the GOAT tag, and it is just not fair. Look at Carlos Sainz. The new Prost for me. Now, he certainly took a long time to stop making errors and has never shown the blinding, fiery tenacity of a Max, a Senna or a Hamilton. But if he was in a top car, he would be winning and fighting for the title too. So, Formula One is not fair, not balanced and never an accurate measuring stick of the talent within. Isolating this season into what it was, a season dominated by two drivers from two teams, one thing is clear, Max was penalised far more than Hamilton for various indiscretions and suffered far more bad luck too. On top of that, Hamilton made more big mistakes but got away with them. Take Imola, reversing onto oncoming traffic, which to my mind was never allowed in the past, but of course it was because it was him. His blinding speed in the latter stages of that race showed how good he and the car were even in round two, and that Mercedes was the best car, not the Red Bull at that stage of the season. For me, the first four races were all about Mercedes, and that crazy track limits thing in Bahrain where Hamilton was allowed to run wide lap after lap, but the second Max did it, suddenly it wasn't on, and don't get me started on that one. So, after Hamilton won three of the first four races, and let's be honest, he would have won in Imola had he not binned it, Red Bull emerged and seemed to have the car advantage. Both teams had questionable wings during the year, with Red Bull having to change theirs, and Mercedes not having to. Don't get me started again. Over the season, the advantage ebbed and flowed, but the Mercedes straight-line speed was undeniable, and the praise Hamilton received in Brazil, for me, was a joke. Why? Well, he had the best car by a country mile on the day. He is also one of the best drivers, if not the best, and Interlagos allows for overtaking, and all but Max steered clearly out of his way. Yet suddenly it was the best drive in history. Oh, come on. There is far too much to discuss, and I cannot do it all in this brief submission, but if I take off my bias hat and imagine being a casual observer, the one thing that is just not right is the inconsistency with the way penalties are handed out. Now, Max has a right to feel aggrieved and targeted, for he has been allowed to drive dangerously in one race and not the next, yet Hamilton, who is also crafty and dirty, just less so, has often got away with it. There were far too many times when penalties that seemed a natural course of action were not imposed. Look at Jeddah, Brazil, Silverstone and Monza, and yet the amount of 5 and 10 second penalties and orders to give back places that Max incurred seemed to show a bias towards the headline-breaking 8th world title narrative for Mercedes and Hamilton. Then you go to the last race, and without any bias, it just looks staged. That last lap in Abu Dhabi was so intense I nearly had a heart attack. But even in that scenario, the rules were not followed to the letter of the law. And it will rumble on and on, which is exactly what turns people off Formula One. We want to see a race and then leave the track or turn off the TV and know the result. No matter what your preference, thank goodness the boring dominance of one driver is over and Formula One finally has a new champion. Champions are tough, ruthless, and not sweet nice guys. And though I do not like the way Max dive bombs into corners and attacks his rivals with no remorse, I do not like the way Hamilton, the perceived best on the grid, often develops understeer when challenged, but gets away with it because he is better at making it look a little less dirty. Had Hamilton won the title this year, given the Silverstone debacle, it would have been a hollow victory for me, for you should never be allowed to put a rival in the wall and gain 25 points on him. Oh yes, Hamilton got a 10-second penalty that day, again, on a track that allowed for overtaking, and the Merc that day was superior. Come on, people. Overall, Max had the lion's share of bad luck and penalties, yet, barring a few dirty moves, was really on it all year, netting 10 wins and 8 second places, although Spa was not really a win, was it? Finally, someone has stood up to Hamilton, much like the way Nando stood up to Shuey back in 05, and, interestingly, the age gap and actual age of the drivers when the changing of the guard occurred was the same, for Nando and Max were 24 when they took on their giant rivals, Shuey and Hammy, who were 36. That is a remarkable coincidence, and if fate is dictating our reality, Hamilton may never be a champion again. We can only hope, can't we? In closing, was this the best year in Formula One history, as is being said by so many? I cannot agree with that. You got to go back to like 86. What about 94? What about 07? What about 2010? There's so many to choose from. But this season was the best in a long while. That's for sure. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. See you later from Australia.
Loosh, outstanding. Happy New Year to you and your family. Nasser?
Yes, sir. The big question being asked now is, will Lewis walk away from the sport? I certainly hope not. The racer in him has a lot of winning left in him. His performance in 2021 speaks for itself. He won 3 of the first 4 races and did the same to close the season. And oh so close was win number 4 in a row. Even the new world champion Max has urged Lewis to keep racing. Max and Alonso are the two people who really know how good Lewis is. Rest of us can only offer opinion. But sir, what is your opinion? Do you think he will come back or he will hang out in LA with his cronies there?
Of course he's going to come back. Let's face it. He really has nothing else to do but put on questionable fashion, hang out in the ghetto in LA. But hey, he's got 2 years. Toto wants him back. They're kissing and loving each other right now. Lewis will be back, and because he wants that ace, the big question is, who will dominate the season next year? Lewis is hoping it's him. Max thinks it's him. Fernando thinks it's him. So that's what it's all about, is who will dominate? Because when Red Bull won the world championship in 2010, that was the beginning of the domination years for Red Bull until we went to the hybrid era. And of course, they thanked Renault for those championships and provided gifts for everyone. But now we're going into a new era again. And the motor is not going to change too much, but the chassis, the ground effects, no more barge boards. Some people suggest that there will be a new Dominator.
Well, the new season will bring in new rules and new cars, and the new cars looks very beautiful, I must say. A great opportunity for Adrian Newey to give Max a car that is head and shoulders above the rest, so we can have a runaway Dutch freight train delivering championship after championship, which is what most people are expecting. And I will not be surprised. Hopefully one day Max will get a car that's what Lewis had in the halcyon days of Mercedes, Senna had, Schumacher had. And I will not be surprised if this kid or young man wins 18 to 20 races in a season. And then people will go gaga that he is the greatest because nobody won so many races in a season. But since the dawn of hybrid era, the Mercedes star and driver has been shining very bright, and I expect them to be strong challengers next season also. Plus, they have extra firepower in the second car. I don't know if that will be advantage to Lewis, courtesy of George, this is Valtteri, or advantage to Max by George taking points from Lewis. There are great expectations that Mr. Russell will not be Lewis's lap dog. This will add extra spice and bangers and mash to the season ahead. And then next season in Abu Dhabi, we will see who gets the kidney pudding. But sir, what about the prancing horse? They have been desperado for the past few seasons, and third in the championship this season should give them new motivation and start winning races and championships. They have a very strong lineup between Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz Jr. Many consider Charles to be as good as Max, and if you take his karting and junior Formula career, it is hard to argue with this point. Sainz Jr. did a great job this season and outscored teams numero uno, and I would, for my nomination, Carlos Sainz Jr. is the most impressive driver this season. But sir, you remember once upon a time, I think it was in Austria when Max won his first, not his first race, but the one with Honda in Austria, he barged, pushed and shoved, Charles Leclerc won the race. And then one of the next races, he tried to do the same thing, and Charles Leclerc got his elbows out, and they were pretty white too. So I think there is some hope for Scuderia Ferrari between the two Cs, Charlie and Carlos. How do you reckon their chances next season?
Well, they have to get through the muck of the marinara sauce, the spaghetti culture. Ferrari seems to design a pretty good-looking car, a fast car. There's just something holding them back, and I think being accused of cheating by the FIA a few years ago has lingered and has left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth. But they should be fairly competitive, but I still think it's going to be Red Bull and Mercedes next year.
That is definitely a very safe bet, and I think that's what's going to happen also. But on the other hand, we have McLaren winning a race this season, and they also have a very strong driver lineup. And Mr. Lando Norris is now performing at a level that brought him 5 championships in as many seasons during his junior career. And another team that won a race this year, your favorite Alpine, let's see what mojo they can perform with Machismo in 2022. Who do you think will be ahead in the championship fight next season between McLaren and Alpine?
I think it's going to be McLaren simply because Ricciardo is going to step it up a little bit. He'll make some adaptations to the new car, and he'll be more competitive with Lando, hence bringing in more points as a team. Apparently, Zach is a good leader because everybody respects him and loves him, and McLaren is a happy camp right now.
Yes, they are very good, doing well and feeling very positive. And, you know, speaking of Red Bull, Christian Horner has been extended as team principal at Red Bull till at least 2026. So that's very good. And hopefully he will continue his war of words with Toto Wolff, which we all enjoy. And, you know, he also, of course, came into the Formula One scene as a very youngest team principal, if I recall. So that's very good. And then, sir, the news that I'm really happy about, apparently Audi has told Formula One people that they will make a decision in January. And indications are that they will come into Formula One. Not sure if Porsche will follow them. Both of them are under the Volkswagen Auto Group. So that's very exciting. And, you know, it really is not a surprise because Signor Stefano Domenicali, who is now head of the Formula One, he used to be CEO at Lamborghini, which is owned by Audi, which is owned by the Volkswagen Group. No, I'm sorry, the Ducati is owned by Audi and the Lamborghini comes under the Volkswagen umbrella. So he must have some very good connections there. And then there is the another connection that this gentleman, Jos Capito, the boss man at Williams, He used to be competitions director at Volkswagen. So I'm sure Volkswagen Group has some good connections where they can get information and get something done their way. So I'm very, very happy. And Audi being a German manufacturer, we know how successful they have been in Le Mans racing. And their history, pedigree, your favorite word, goes back to the days of Auto Union and Bernd Rosemeyer. So it will just be a matter of time before they get going here. Porsche has already won Formula One championship as an engine supplier. So I'm very, very happy that new manufacturers are coming in. Your thoughts on it, sir?
Well, I am very skeptical, and we'll see. I just can't believe Porsche and Audi would come into Formula One under that Volkswagen umbrella, especially in these weird electrification years that are ahead of us. No news on the synthetic fuel. These companies are bargaining on synthetic fuel to keep the internal combustion engine going. So we'll see how that comes up. I mean, I think the fuel will be developed. When is the key?
Well, you know, I will not be surprised if Audi comes in because of all this news that's going on. Plus, they are also dropping MGU-H, H for heat, which apparently was a complicated and very expensive part of the engine package. And, of course, that would mean we have more noise. And we like what they say in a song, let's make some noise, boys. So I'm very excited. And as far as Porsche coming in, that really is not far-fetched. If one of the other group, a member, comes in, and simply because they're not going to develop two different engines, they will just have same engine, one called Porsche, one called Audi. This has been done before. So I'm very excited, and hopefully they can bring some budget, bring some, have Formula One be less of what Lewis Hamilton very rightly called BBC, Billionaire Boys Club. So my hopes are very high, Mr. Rogers, on this front.
I'm happy for you, Nasser. My fingers are crossed just for you.
Thank you, sir. And sir, more news is Mick Schumacher will be Ferrari's reserve driver at 11 of the races in 2022, which I think is good. And his uncle, Ralph, has been lately very critical of his teammate. He thinks that Nikita Mazepin should go and do something else or some other series because he cannot provide any support to Mick or to the team. So we'll see how it goes. And I think, you know, having watched Mick Schumacher's junior career, both in, from Formula 4 to Formula 3 to Formula 2, and he did win Formula 3 and Formula 2 championships, it has taken him 2 years. And even in the second year, he really was nowhere to be seen in the first half. But then he turned on his twin turbo and won the championship in very impressive style, I must say, when I thought he had no hope because he was so far behind. So I think this kid really needs to, he's very dedicated to his craft like his papa, and I think he needs to be in a better car. And maybe with Audi / Porsche coming in, maybe they can take him as one of the homeboys to be in a more competitive package. As you know, Mr. Rogers, Andreas Seidel is the, I don't know what his title is, but he's the boss man, team manager at McLaren. He comes from Porsche, and I will not be surprised. It's already been rumored. Actually, it was rumored that Audi was trying to buy McLaren. So I will not be surprised if we hear an announcement very soon that Audi will partner McLaren. Do you think they might go to some other team?
I haven't a clue. All this to me is Greek.
I thought you were a big fan of Euros.
I am indeed.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about poor Nicholas Latifi. You know, when Lewis Hamilton won his first championship, Timo Glock got a lot of hate mail, and he even told me himself that it's, you know, a lot of it was how because of him, Lewis, because of his race, Timo allowed him to somebody of that race to become world champion. And, you know, this kind of hatred is out there. And Latifi is getting a lot of abuse also on the interweb. Any thoughts on that, or this is also Greek to you?
No, I mean, that's social media. If you're going to go into social media, you're going to get death threats if you've done something terrible. I mean, it wasn't his fault. But yeah, the best thing to do is close the window and don't go on social media, and then you're safe and loved.
Oh, that's a nice plug for Microsoft. Close the window. Okay, sir, here is some sad news. The spectators who were at the so thrilling Belgian Grand Prix this year, they are getting a Isaac Hayes CD from the race organizers. But they have offered some sort of package that you can enter a sort of a lottery, and you may get some goodie bags. Something may come out of the goodie bags, limited seats, some VIP enclosures, but there will be no refund. So that's the way that story goes. What else would you like to talk about, Mr. Rogers?
Well, I'm sort of bummed on the no refund thing. I think it's wrong. I mean, the people that buy these tickets, they're regular folk like you and I, guys that punch a clock and work every day. And to not give them a refund is just wrong. It's going to affect the attendance next year for sure. And it leaves, once again, why does the fan have to swallow the bitter pill?
Yeah, but I guess the organizers will say, read what it says on the back of the ticket. Motorsports is dangerous. Come at your own risk. But I do agree with you. They should have done something. Remember when we had the Michelin fiasco? Michelin refunded and gave free tickets and all that kind of stuff. So I agree with you on that. And not only that, you know, a lot of these race fans, like you said, they're like us. They punch a ticket. You know, a lot of these people come from different places, or even within Belgium or wherever the race is. They save and they plan, and there is some sacrifice involved, I would say, for some people. And to treat them like that is not very good, because it's the regular fan that makes any sport big, not the VIP enclosure, even though the VIP enclosure, we have to admit, do provide bulk of the big box. But we'll see. Okay, sir, moving on to the memorable moments from the 2021 season. Apart from the boogity boogity let's go racing boys at Abu Dega, what stands for you, what you will remember most, just if somebody was to ask?
Well, for me, it was Monza with Lewis Hamilton and Max crashing into each other, and of course Silverstone when Lewis Hamilton said, "See you later, alligator." That definitely stood out. And of course, the ending is going to stand out for everyone for the rest of their lives.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No question about it. But sir, for me, a few of the moments, Max in Azerbaijan was very impressive till his Mansell moment. By this time, by this race, I mean, I was convinced he and Honda may be able to do what Sebastian Vettel and at Ferrari could not. His tremendous talent and Honda's determination is my comfort in sucking up and surviving the messy mess from Yas Marina. And sir, speaking of Azerbaijan, I was thinking, remember we talked about a few years ago, Michael Andretti's junior Formula team made a mistake and his driver lost the championship at Laguna Seca, and he was complaining to Michael Andretti about losing because of the team screw up. And Michael Andretti very rightly says, "No, no, no, you did not lose the championship here." He referred to a race where the driver had made a mistake when he was in like a top three position. I was thinking the importance of finishing every race. You know, you don't have to win every damn race to become world champion. And it's easy to say this after the fact. But do you remember when Max had his tire blown up? Lewis Hamilton was in a position to finish first and second. And what did he do at the start of the last few remaining laps? He outbraked himself and did not finish on the podium. So that really is a lesson for all young drivers, that always collect what you can collect. You don't have to win the championship. You don't have to win the championship by winning each and every race. But sir, I have to say, as much as deserving Max is, and there is no question about it, in winning this year's championship, apparently he led more laps than all other drivers combined. Definitely has more wins than anybody. So very, very impressive. But I would say LCH was equally impressive. You know, he overcame a 30-plus point deficit and was put in a tight squeeze to win the last four races to take his number 8 And he delivered on that for all practical purposes, grabbing the lead from Max in the season finale at the start despite a tire disadvantage is something I will have in my memory bank as one of the finest in F1 Kodak moments from 2021. And the another thing I will not forget is the Russian roulette in Sochi, McLaren team trying to help Lando Norris, a driver I admire very much for his talents, and him telling the team to shut up, which, you know, I understand is, you know, you have a lot of pressure to score your first F1 victory and the heat of the moment. So that was another one for me. Now, definitely, McLaren winning at Monza. Honey Badger was in danger of being totally overshadowed by his teammate, Norris. Like Lewis in final race, Danny Boy also grabbed the lead from Max on pole at the start for an incredible win, leading Zak Brown to get a tattoo of the Monza track on his arm. And sir, I'm surprised you, of all the people, did not mention this, because I'm going to remember this forever. Machismo in Magyar Republic. I don't know why he is on fire in Hungary, but his defense against old teammate was probably the best on-track duel of the season. And the delay he caused Lewis allowed his teammate Esteban Ocon to record his first Grand Prix win. So that's another one of many, many feathers in the cap or sombrero of machismo. Do you concur? I'm sure you concur.
Well, of course. I mean, I didn't need to mention it because Lewis is going to remember it. And that's the important part.
I'm sure he will remember it and cherish it because, you know, any good racer will love a good race where they can compete cockpit to cockpit and wheel to wheel and still finish. Okay, so another high point which had a very nostalgic for me element for me was the race in Saudi Arabia. When petrol dollars are gushing, building the fastest street circuit is dust in the wind, you know. Money can buy a lot of things. I remember very well Jackie Stewart being interviewed on BBC World Service shortly after his retirement in 1973. And I remember him saying motor racing in his, you know, wonderful wee bit Scottish accent, that motor racing is growing in popularity all over the globe. And who knows, one day we may have a race in Saudi Arabia in Timbuktu. And here we are. Time for a shout out to ExxonMobil to start drilling in Mali and make JYS prophecy come totally true. And that's what we want. Formula One from Baku to Timbuktu.
Okay, so we'll be back after this brief message.
Well, welcome to F1Weekly.com. Mr. Alexander, how are you? How's your day going at Laguna Seca?
It's going very well. It's great. The Toyota Formula One car has been here and just sucked all the people out of our stand.
Exactly. That was a glorious moment.
Now's a good time to do an interview.
Yeah, we waited until the noise calmed down, the crowds calmed down. But anyway, in your career, having covered Formula One, what's one of your most memorable moments?
I think taking the picture of Jimmy Clark, portrait on the podium at Spa in Belgium, 1962, at the end of the race. And then, of course, the Mexico picture was one of my first. It was in 1953. Yeah, it's hard to think of the... I mean, they're all interesting images, and it was a great time.
Having covered a sport that's really not well known in the U.S., what promoted you and excited you to cover Formula One?
When I was in college, I'd seen some of the English magazines, car magazines, and they were illustrating, there were stories about the Mercedes on testing of the Mercedes W196, and I got really excited about the idea of covering Grand Prix racing, and I went to Europe, and a lot of that is in my new book. Talks about all that experience.
New book that just come out.
A Porsche Moments.
I saw the book. It's absolutely glorious.
Thank you.
I mean, there's some great drivers out there like Fangio, Stirling Moss, Jim Clark. For you, who's really the most standing out person?
Fangio. Yeah, here's some pictures of him at Pescara in 1957.
And where was this picture taken?
In Pescara, in Italy.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Fantastic. What track, from all the Formula One tracks in Europe and even Watkins Glen in the U.S., which one really stands out in your mind?
I think the Belgian track, Spa-Francorchamps. There's some pictures here from Spa, I think. The picture of Fangio was taken at Reims in France.
Which is Reims?
Reims to you, yeah.
Reims to me.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that's one of my favorite tracks. My family is actually from that area in France, and I go to the track occasionally just to meditate.
Sure. So the pits are still there, that iconic.
Exactly. That's what's so wonderful about Reims. There's no graffiti. They've taken it's such an important track as he's signing some books for the folks here at Laguna Seca.
One of my fans are. Thank you.
Yeah, Jesse Alexander with a lot of fans here in a wonderful exhibition. Nasser, any good questions for Jesse?
Yes, you know, you sound as passionate about Formula One today as you were probably back in the day. How would you compare today's drivers and the racing itself compared to 50, 60 years ago?
It's like being on a different planet.
Really?
End of story.
Different. No comparison whatsoever.
No. I mean, the guys are still the same in their eyesight and their reactions and all that, but... Yeah, look at the picture of Stirling Moss there and compare that with a Schumacher portrait.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
And among some of the names like Fangio and Clark, did you get to know these people personally?
Yeah, a little bit. Not great, you know, buddy friends, but yeah, we were all like a big family, kind of.
And some of the very important motor racing races like, you know, Fangio winning at Nürburgring 57. Were you there?
In where?
1957 Nürburgring.
Yes, I was, definitely. Yeah.
Can you tell us the excitement?
Well, of course,
race?
It was his greatest race.
Absolutely.
And it's the 50th anniversary is coming up next year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you plan to be at Nürburgring? Are they doing something special?
I'm doing a special project, a couple of images for.
And
to commemorate that event.
Were you also at Spa in 67, your favorite track, when Dan Gurney won in his own Eagle?
I was not there.
Oh, you were not.
That would have been, that's one of my regrets.
Okay. And... you mentioned that you were in college and you were reading these magazines. What part of the country are you from?
California.
Oh, you're from
yeah,
California.
Yeah,
oh, interesting.
Yeah,
Southern
yeah.
California?
Santa Barbara.
Santa. Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. Okay, I think you have more fans here. We thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Jesse. One more quick question. Did you get to know other photographers, for example, Bernard Caillé?
Of course. Bernard was an old great friend.
I figured that.
Have you talked to him recently? Have you seen him? How is he doing?
I spoke to his son, Paul-Henri, and he's been ill lately, but he's hanging in there like an old dog.
Yeah. He was a smoker, as I recall.
Most French people.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking to us, Jesse.
My pleasure.
And have a good day.
Portugal.
No, I'm from Pakistan, actually.
From where?
Pakistan.
Pakistan. And
yeah,
you're from?
I'm from America. My mom's French.
Oh, I see. I get
it. So I call him half rude.
Yeah, I'm only half rude.
Okay.
Okay, thank you and have a good day.
Jesse Alexander, thank you very much for joining F1Weekly.com. We certainly do appreciate it.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we will start from the halls of FIA Palacio Palace, the FIA prize-giving Gala, tomato, whatever you want to call it, is available on YouTube. I have not watched this because I was trying to recover from the Down syndrome of the past weekend. Have you watched this, sir?
Yes, it's exciting. Bottas is there. Max is loved by everyone. And I honestly think that Lewis and Toto should have showed up to show the world that they're good sportsmen and they can hold hands in public still.
Interesting. And, you know, speaking of Max, somebody posted on the web a picture of him and Kelly Piquet with the caption saying he stole Lewis's championship and Kvyat's wife. But, you know, to each his own. And, of course, speaking of FIA, they have elected new president, Mr. Mohammed bin Sulayem, is from Dubai and is the first non-European head of FIA. He is a former rally driver and has been involved in the organization of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. His first headache is dealing with absence of Lewis from the FIA Gala, which top three drivers are required to attend, like appearing on the podium after a race. Now, interestingly, in charge of Latin American Affairs or FIA will be Fabia, and I'll say the last name slowly so people understand. So there is no misunderstanding. Her last name is Ecclestone. And I say, if she can give Bernie a baby, I am sure she can deliver other miracles also in motorsports. Any idea, sir, what the penalty on Lewis will be?
Yes. He will have to wear a sandwich board in the middle of London and wave to the people and say that I will attend the next gala, win or lose.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes it's better to stay away from things than show up and create more mess. So that's just my opinion. And losing in the way, I don't think they would have lost it if it was just like a regular race. Then they would have showed up, they put up a good fight. But to be what was done, I won't call it any names. I can understand the no show. Okay, sir, moving on. Santander banking on Ferrari. The Spanish financial giant will return to Scuderia Ferrari once again as a sponsor next season, not just in Formula One, but also in some other series. This probably means more pesos in the pocket of Carlito. Santander also sponsored Ferrari when they had Machismo from Oviedo. Santander has become a big player in the US also after several acquisitions. And not complaining, but my previous employer here in Tampa was also acquired by them. So my gracias to them for putting me in the UE line. But life goes on. Okay, sir, did you pay any attention to the F1 postseason testing?
A little bit. It's pretty meaningless, but I was impressed that the new world champion showed up to work, was testing, and of course, Pat O'Ward was freaking out so much about the cars in Formula One that how could you not hear about the testing? I mean, he was absolutely over the moon testing the McLaren.
He is a very talented driver doing very well here, but he made a comment that he has no interest in doing, you know, junior Formula to get to, in Europe to get to Formula One, which would be Formula Two. And as we all know, it's not very easy to win Formula 2 in your first season. So I think it's smart on his part to stay on this side, do very well. And then if McLaren wants to put him in the McLaren F1 car, that will be the ticket to go. And speaking of tickets, British Grand Prix has announced that general admission tickets are sold out, okay? Which is, of course, for the 2022 British Grand Prix. The circuit posted a notification on social media informing fans that there were only limited grandstand and hospitality tickets remaining for next year's race. Around 350,000 people attended this year's event at the circuit over the 3 days of running. The race on Sunday saw Lewis Hamilton win the British Grand Prix for a record 8th time following a controversial clash with you-know-who, Max Verstappen. And that's the way it goes sometimes in racing. And sir, this is very interesting news and I'm very happy for him. Felipe Nasr has joined Penske Racing in their sports program with Porsche. The team will compete in both IMSA series here in US and World Endurance Championship, also known as WEC in Europe and other places. This is a good signing for one-time Sauber F1 driver. And hopefully I will get to meet him again at Daytona and Sebring. And sir, Mayer is leaving office. Canadian racer James Hinchcliffe has announced his departure from IndyCar racing, but planned to race somewhere if and when a seat is available. He won races and highlight was pole for the Indy 500, and apparently he's going to be in the NBC telecast booth. So that will be interesting. Sir, speaking of testing at Yas Marina, there was Formula 4 UAE testing also. And looking to the future, I think my focus is on a few young kids, as is always looking for, you know, new talent coming through the system by the name of Andrea Kimi Antonelli. He set the fastest lap on first day of testing, and this would be for the Formula UAE Championship Series. And Alex Wurz's son is also testing in this series, and not sure which series both of these kids will race next season, but I'm sure they will be in some sort of a Formula 4 championship. And Kimi, in the few races he did this year, he was very, very impressive. And he is under the wings of Toto Wolff. So we can see him in Formula 1 in a few years. And let's see what else we have. So I'm hoping that after Lewis has won 9 championship and George Russell has tasted his first title, Toto may have another whippersnapper on his books, and we will keep an eye on him, as we would like to do when the talent is hot. Sir, some sad news. This was very sad. I did not even know the lady was still around. Hazel Chapman, sad news came last week. Widow of Colin Chapman passed away at the age of 94. Hazel and Colin met at a dance in 1944, and Lotus Cars were started 4 years later. Like Ginny Williams, she played an important part in the success of her husband's company and racing team. In fact, she paid the $25 to incorporate Lotus Cars in 1952. You know, there was a place called a Railway Hotel in England, somewhere near London, or in London, Colin Chapman used to operate from. And, you know, I don't know if it's still around, but if it's there, I would like to go and see the place, as I would very much like to go and see the shed, timber shed, where Kent Tyrrell was operating from. Hazel worked with many Lotus legends. Listen to the names that she was associated with. Jim Clark, Graham Hill, Jochen Rindt, Emerson Fittipaldi, Mario Andretti, Nigel Mansell, and a chap by the name of Ayrton Senna. You know, when we, Mr. Brazier and I visited Lotus Classic Cars, Clive Chapman, Colin's son, said to me that among the things, you know, I was asking about meeting all these drivers, and he said he remembers Emerson Fittipaldi as a world champion coming to pick him up from his school. And then he said Ayrton Senna, he said he was very polite to his mom. So that's very nice to hear these things. Now, Mr. Matt Windle, managing director of Lotus Cars, said, and I quote, "Without Hazel Chapman, there would be no Lotus. The entire Hethel team and those working at our facilities around the world send their sincere condolences and best wishes to the Chapman family." End quote. And so do we here at F1 Weekly. Any comment on her passing, sir? Any remembrance you may have?
No, I have to admit, I didn't know that she was still in existence. But it's always sad. Always sad.
Yeah. Now, some good news. Ex-F1 driver and IndyCar superstar Alex Zanardi has left the hospital to continue his recovery at home. He had suffered serious head injuries in June 2020 in a bike accident when he crashed into a truck. Man, you know, I cannot believe what a fighter this guy is. I mean, absolutely mind-blowing the way he came back from his IndyCar crash and to be in the shape he is now, to have this serious accident. And if he can, I think he will still continue competing. So all the best to him and his family. And now, sir, he's back. Your hombre, compadre, Sebastian Loeb, will drive a hybrid Ford Puma for M Sport in next month's Monte Carlo rally. He will also take part in the Dakar rally with another team. The Monte Carlo rally is a one-event deal with M Sport. Then we will see if he will add more rallies to his schedule. Loeb is a 9-time World Rally champion. His compadre and namesake, Sebastian Ogier, is sitting on 8 titles. Very, very interesting. You know, I remember when I started motorsports in the 70s, there were some rally drivers who would win Monte Carlo and do well. But most of the time, WRC was totally dominated by Finns and Swedes, beyond Vordegaard being one of the biggest names, who sadly has now passed away. But now we have a very strong domination from your homeboys, so that's good. Now we come to the doctor, the ever-exciting Valentino Rossi. He retired from MotoGP this season, but not from racing. Next month, he will drive a Ferrari in the Gulf 12 Hours in Abu Dhabi. And this is one of the very few non-Formula One people that I'm very, very interested in doing an interview. I did talk to his team PR guy some years ago at Yamaha. And not only just Yamaha, Honda, but also Ducati. Getting to a MotoGP rider is even more difficult for an interview than getting to a Formula One driver. But that's the way it is. Okay, sir, this, you know, I do that when there is no racing. If we have a 3-week break or during the off season, I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube, which is very, very exciting. So today we have a blast from the past. And I was thinking of you, Mr. Rogers. I was watching Formula 3000 race from Imola in 2000. quite a few interesting names in that field. Mark Webber, Sebastian Bourdais, and Enrique Bernoulli, a driver Red Bull rated higher than Kimi Raikkonen back in the early days of Formula One sponsorship. But the most interesting man in the world and in that race was driving a yellow car sponsored by a phone company, Telefonica. 5 years later at the same track, he would become machismo by holding off the Red Baron for one of the greatest wins in Formula One. Further, 2 years down the road, he would be sponsored by another phone company, Vodafone, but he would hang up on them after rookie teammate ate the gazpacho of the machismo. And that was today's trip down memory lane, or as the host would say, what would you say, sir?
Ooh, the memories.
Yes, I was going to say that, but I said, no, let's hear the authentic. So that's where we are, sir. Anything else, Mr. Rogers?
Nothing. I'm running out of stuff. I'm starting to get into the winter mode. And since today is the first day of winter, it's time to hibernate and think of those wonderful world championships by Renault in the past and Alpine in the future.
You know, speaking of French Connection, there's Renault Sport. They do it on Facebook. You can even watch their Renault Clio Cup Racing Series live action if you are interested. And I do that quite a bit on other series also, you know, especially like the Brazilian touring cars or stock cars, as they call them. And every now and then, the Aussie Championship. For some reason, DTM does not. They put their qualifying on the web, but not their races, at least I've not seen. And I was very, very surprised that series that can really use global exposure, the Formula W for the ladies, they also don't put their races on the web. You can see highlights or people putting stuff. So it's all good stuff out there. And by the way, have you heard from Mr. Bill English from Daytona 24 Hours for my media credentials, amigo?
Nothing, sir. Bill is a very busy man and he will contact you when everything is calmed down in the motorsports industry.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Daytona 24 Hours. And then, of course, we have Sebring coming up. And then we have IndyCar. I think IndyCar is early in the season this year. So the season is going to, of course, there is Dakar Rally. So really looking forward to the start of the new season. And more motorsports, the merrier I am.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. Outstanding. Just to let you know, Toto watches the Clio Cup a lot and uses the Clio Cup as a metaphor for some of the racing he witnesses at the F1 level. But on that note, I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, the whole schlemiel and schlemazel. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Happy holidays. And we'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. My thanks to everybody also, and happy holidays. And I hope our listeners will join us next season also.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.